Hey, friends. I think it's been a while since we've done one of these, or we've only done one in the last
couple of months. Yeah, yeah.
Mentality of Combat Sports. It's my friend David Mullins. On Twitter, he's David Mullins MMA. I'm Robin Black MMA on Twitter. And we tried to get together. We were getting closer to every week and a half or so, but you know how it gets. There's a million things going on all at one time. But it's good to get together. Thank you. People really have been really cool about this podcast and responding to it and chatting with us about it and sending us really interesting things and stuff. And it's been really cool. And we thank you. Let's get into it. We haven't chatted for a bit. Every time we're watching fights now, I know you do this, and I do this at times. We see this. There's a physical thing going on. It's punching a guy. Guy's kicking, stopping something. But there is so much going on in the minds of the guys that are fighting. There's so much. And the more you know about it, you start to be able to see certain things. It gives you insight into how and why things happen. And and I think that's why people have been really cool with us. And we're hoping that maybe one or two of those things you start to see now, and you start to be able to see in behind, get in the back of the machine a little bit and see what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, to me, it's so obvious because when I'm working with guys, I know what they've been thinking, what's been going on in the build-up, where they're at. So I'm watching the fight knowing all this stuff. And it's crazy then that people can make predictions and think they know how a fight's going to go without knowing that information about the guy, where he's at, what he's been thinking, the different stuff that goes on. So obviously, if it's true for the guys I know and I'm working with in the build-up to a fight, it's true for everyone. You know, everyone's thinking stuff and they've got different stuff going on before the fight and different ways of looking at things. And so every fight's fascinating from that point of view. And you can see performances where guys are free and see performance where guys are tight, tense, trying not to lose, or you know, not in the moment. And it's hard to know what the reasoning is though without knowing the guy. Yeah, and sometimes it's hard knowing the guy, you know, that and trying to figure that out in aftermath is a big part of my job. Like,
I actually just as you were saying that, and you said you recognize obviously everybody is thinking or their mind is working. You to pick this book up, my brain has to do stuff. You know, as simple as that sounded, my brain has to do stuff, but it does.
Yeah.
And something I wanted to ask you about, I remember it came up in conversation recently. So when a person is thinking to themselves, they're thinking with words.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You form sentences whether you think them out loud or not. When a person's in a free flow state, on some level they're actually thinking without words, are they not?
We tend to think with images a lot as well as words. Mm-hmm. Like we have to picture things when we're thinking. When we're in that flow state, like you're saying, and just free, there's very little thinking going on at all. It's you're free from that. You're just doing. It's one of the things that we've got some video to get to in a bit, but it kind of shows that part of the game where there's decisions being made constantly in a fight by fighters. Constantly, even though you wouldn't think of it like that, you just see the fight and it looks like it's free form. It's nonstop decision making. Nonstop. Choices, multiple choices all the time.
When Ramdeen and I call fights together, one of the people develop go-to things that they say, and I'll often say, oh, he made a great choice.
Yeah.
You know, that was a good choice. The truth is, at all times, I could decide to hit your arm, do this thing, have a sip of this. Every single choice is available to us. Now, I haven't seen the film. You and Chase have put it together, so I'm super eager. I hope you don't mind if we get to it, because I want to see what you're working on. And what I do know about what you're going to show is that it involves decision-making.
Yeah.
Within the chaos, within the moments, under the lights, under duress. Tell me what we're going to look at.
So the only way, and it's harsh on the fighters I've picked out, but the only way to really demonstrate it is through bad decisions. Mm-hmm. It really highlights it then. When you can see the consequence afterwards of that decision, and maybe we can get into some of the factors that led to them making that decision. So we've got some examples of famous fights, big fights that have happened, or like recently well-known fighters and everything, where there was just one key moment for me that's the fight within the fight.
So I hate to like be a what do you call it when you spoiler?
Oh yeah,
is there a Chris Weidman? There is. That's funny.
Yeah.
I'm now thinking of it. So I'll save my question. I have a question about that and an interesting thing because I broke that. I know what it is, I think. And I've broken it down many times in a breakdown that didn't end up getting shown.
It was good. I remember that.
Yeah, the fight got canceled. So I have some questions. But can we look at that one first?
We can get that one, Chase. Okay, Weidman Rockhold.
So our guy Chase Kaiser over here. Are we going to see it up in here, Chase?
Yeah, there
it is. Okay. So you talk me through.
So this is for the title, the two best middleweights at the time. And as the fight's going on, this is round three. Mm-hmm. This is the start of the end for Weidman. So it's probably 1-1 heading into this round. And you can see Weidman's doing pretty well here. He landed some good body kicks and they're having an effect on Rockhold.
Yeah.
And you can see, like this one especially, you can see the damage that was done with that. He follows up with another one a little bit. Chris is coming forward. Yeah. Luke is on the back foot here. Chris lands another body kick, and then we'll see it unfold where he gets to the point where he has a choice that he didn't. You know, he goes to the head. He tries to go to the head. Mm. Luke shakes his head, and then this.
Yeah, right.
And it's completely out of character. Mm-hmm. Not seen him do it before. And that was it. That was the fight was over for him from that moment. He never recovered, and that's a different story. We'll get to that. But he never really got back on track again. The fight was finished in the next round. It should have been finished in this round.
The beating he took. He got to show off some heart and toughness, but the fight was over. So I have lots of questions about this. And so a number of things. As you saw that breakdown that I did.
Yeah.
And I called that the moment.
Yeah. Right? Yeah. Yeah.
And when I looked into it, I looked for little tidbits of Rockhold sort of engaging him psychologically.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you see it. I wish I actually, and maybe we have footage of that breakdown. I try to keep them. If they do, maybe I can link it or we can do something. I'm not sure. But I showed a number of different moments of Rockhold engaging him psychologically. Do you think that had a bearing on it?
Yeah. If you see if Chase can bring it back up to the point where he goes to the head kick.
Yep.
The first off.
Yeah.
And Luke gives him a little shake head. No, that's not going to, not going to work.
The spin kick feels in response to that.
It seems like he's trying to one-up him. Mm-hmm. He's put himself out of his own game, or he's allowed Luke to put himself out of his own game.
Yeah.
The body kicks were being super effective.
Very effective.
And it makes sense to switch it up to the head maybe, you know, because he thinks he's going to block to the body and the headshot's going to be there. But Luke gives him this, and Chris responds with that, which is out of character. He's not. Yeah. We don't see it from him. Yeah. It's a decision.
Overachieving decision.
It's what it is. Like, it looks like it's just technique, and he had a decision in that moment. And there's a
choice.
Multiple choices. Yeah. Multiple choices.
That's the choice he made.
There's not unlimited, but there's a lot of choices.
Well, yeah, you can't have breakfast right there, but you can back away. You can move towards. Yeah. You can do nothing. You can change your level.
Yeah.
You can move your foot in any direction. You can anything. There are physical choices of all kinds.
A lot of choices.
And he made that choice. Yeah. So that was one fascinating part for me. The other one, and I know this is something that you probably are already getting to, but Weidman spoke about this after, and I really liked hearing him say this. He was like, you know, yes, the spin kick was bad. He's like, but every other position I should be able to win.
Yeah.
I pride myself on winning every position. That includes I'm on the bottom of mount. I know how to get back to half guard.
Yeah.
I'm in a bad spot here. I know how to get back. It shouldn't have led to the failure of every single choice executed after, but he snowballed.
Yeah, yeah. Luke got on top and stayed there and landed some heavy shots. Yeah. And I disagree that he can come out in the fourth round and still get on top because I think he was done.
Yes.
But before that point, before it got to the point where Luke was, you know, the fight could have been ended. Yeah, Chris is still in the fight and he, like he says, he has to recover and win that position now, be in this new position. But I think, as we're looking through these, it's a good way of maybe thinking about decision making. It's such a hard thing to study, real-time decision making. It's an easy thing to study in business or in different things.
Video games, real-time decision-making.
Yeah,
you know,
and so much
like
of it is just instinctive.
Yeah.
So much of it is just resorting back to your training. But there are certain factors that can influence that and take you out of your decision, like maybe Luke shaking the head and letting him know that's not going to work.
It shouldn't take you out.
But it can.
Yeah. So there's a few things. I'm going to circle back later about regaining that because that you shouldn't suddenly you let in one goal and you let in 100 goals. Yeah. There's no Holly Holm in there in this, is there?
No. Okay. No.
Holly against Shevchenko was not as bold of an example of the. And this, I know this snowball part of the conversation we are going to save till later because I want to look at decision making.
Yeah.
But Holly Holm snowballed as she's had less and less success against Shevchenko also, and that doesn't need to happen. So I'm going to circle back.
Yeah, that's another. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah.
It's connected for sure, but it's a whole other thing. And they're all connected. Everything in this. In this sport, in the mindset stuff, it's all interlinked. Mm-hmm. It's all connected.
Mm-hmm.
But to study real-time, instant snap judgment decision-making is tough.
Yeah,
they've done some research on chess, but it's still not instant. You know, you still have your time to make your decision, even when it's time pressure. You still have some time. Plus, you know, the consequences are not the same.
Yeah,
and there's no head trauma involved in decision making.
Yeah, you do get mentally fatigued, but you don't get physically fatigued.
Physical,
there's no weapons that have been removed.
You get fatigued, but it's not the same. It's just not the same. What they found in the studies that they've done on chess, though, is it is interesting that like the factors that can influence a decision like that are things like the complexity of the situation at the time of the board. How difficult it is to make that decision based on, you know, where things are, what positions things are on the board, the time that's left, the time remaining, and how quick it needs to be that you have to make that decision now, plus the skill of the
opponent,
yourself,
the player.
The player.
Yeah.
Like the higher the skill level, the better the decisions or the less mistakes.
Right.
To a point. And then after, it can get to the point where they overthink things, and you know, that's a whole other thing as well. But the most important part of it, what they found was the most crucial factor was the difficulty of the decision, like the complexity of the board at the time, which might explain some of these examples, you know, where it's easy to make decisions when you're in flow and everything's just working and you're going well and one thing just leads to another and you're on top. And the board is not that complex if we think of the fight and the chess. You know, but when it's a fight that's back and forth and there's so many different things at play and the opponent is at a high level. And
your brain has more and more demanded of it. And it will fatigue. And what's interesting for me is, and I don't know that there's necessarily an answer to this, is in some of these what we're seeing is an overloaded brain, overloaded amount of choices, overloaded amount of pressure.
Yeah.
It's crazy for the average person to think about getting to any of that point. But these guys are highly skilled mental athletes that have got to the point. But at that moment of overload, I wonder if there's a certain randomness to how the brain just fires off an option. That you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Where you don't get to, if for anyone who's ever seen the original Terminator, something happens, there's a knock at the door and it's like, you know, are you there? Yes, no. Fuck you, asshole. And the Terminator's brain goes, fuck you, asshole. You know? I don't know that Weidman's mind cycled through every option.
No, I couldn't do it.
It just fired something off.
Yeah. But I mean, that's not what he would do.
No.
If you could freeze time and he steps away, he's not going to throw that kick.
Chris, what choice would you make here? He'll list you 30 and none of them will be that kick.
But to me,
against the closed side of the body, like,
there's
no reason to throw that kick.
No.
Only negative repercussions from that choice.
But it definitely did feel like he was trying to one-up Rockhold's.
Mm-hmm. It was in response.
It was in response to that. That's the part for me where you can step in before the fight. You can have prepared for that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can have prepared for the mind games or the, you know, just a simple shake of the head. You can prepare. That doesn't need to impact you. You can stay in your game. You can stay in the moment. He took himself out of the moment.
Yeah.
Like, Rockhold didn't take Chris out. Chris took himself out by his reaction.
Yeah, right.
Conor against Nate in the rematch stayed in the moment a lot better than in the first fight. You know, like Nate drops to the ground a few times. Well, Conor dropped him, and Conor didn't follow him down. Stayed stuck to the plan. You know,
the same thing started to happen in the second. That where he did unfold a little bit enough to lose the first fight, and he didn't unfold.
Yeah.
Been acclimatized.
Just had planned. It's just preparation for that stuff. So that's the part for me that could be worked on is that it's difficult in real time. You can't simulate that exactly, but you can simulate some of the factors that lead to it. The guy trying to fuck with you in the middle of the fight and mess with your head. You can work on that. There's maybe the best one to bring up next, Chase, is probably Michael Johnson and Habib.
Before you roll that, I do want to say what I 100% agree with you that the only way to really look at this is where there was a clear bad choice made, and you can see the consequences and how it happened. And I think part of the reason is whenever you're seeing things go well, it's a series of great choices.
It's
a series of appropriate choices.
It doesn't stand out so much.
Like almost every choice, if things are going well, is a correct choice to some degree. And so it's hard to identify, oh, look here, he decided to go for this. Well, you know, it's a correct choice. It doesn't stand out in any way. They're all correct. It's very interesting. Interesting.
Like there's just these moments in fights that shape them. Habib and Michael Johnson fought like it was a recent fight. People will think back on it as Habib dominant, but Michael Johnson started the fight really well. If we roll it, we can see the start of the during the first round on the feet. Michael Johnson is having his way with Habib for a while.
Yes, he was lighting him up, moving his feet. It was real ferocious.
He's doing what he wanted to do, and Habib didn't have an answer at this point.
And you see the way he steps in, fires, and steps away. That the simple observation here: this was planned, strategized, all good choices.
He's happy with how he's moving. He's doing what he wanted to do. He lands a really good shot,
offering up feints and doing it from enough of a distance, and beautiful stuff. He was
that
perfectly
backhand to
prepared.
The body, and he's mixing things up really well. Hurts him here, and Habib goes to his response, which is what he wanted to do the whole time anyway. He's willing to get in. He's willing to take a shot to get in to close the distance.
It's a bad idea against. I mean, you're not going to win forever with that.
No, far from it. But he gets close, and once he does, he'll finish this takedown, and he'll pass so quick as well. He's just like a knife the way he passes straight away.
It's really unreal. And that turn, it's just you have to have full confidence to be able to make that turn on that takedown.
So that's the first round. Second round starts again, and Michael Johnson fights off that takedown. So first takedown in the first round, didn't fight it off. That was the end of the first round. Just finished on top. So back into the second round, Habib shoots again, stuffed. And does a good job. Gets a good underhook, gets it stuffed again. So again, he stuffs, good sprawl. And now, here we are at decision time. He's got the neck, jumps on the guillotine.
Bad choice.
And it's a panic. And you could feel the momentum was starting to go in Johnson's favor. He just stuffs another few of those, and maybe he gets back to that rhythm he had in the first round. And I'm thinking again, it's the complexity, it's the panic, he got out of what he would have wanted to do. If you could freeze it for him, he's never going to jump in that guillotine again.
It's true. That one is. It feels like a response to okay.
It's the pressure that could be put on you.
Exactly. Because if you thought, I stopped a takedown, great. I stopped a takedown, great. I stopped a takedown, okay, I stopped it. Now it's an overload. Again, it's an overload that you start, and your answer, rather than having yourself asked to keep up this tense battle, instead, well, I'm going to try this. And try this. You know this is the wrong choice. Now, so this is, again, I'm taking you off topic, I know, because I get so much curiosity in so many of these moments. But if he finished that choke, it's still the wrong choice.
Yeah, exactly.
It's still the wrong choice.
100%. 1,000%. The result cannot be the... and that's one of the things that's tough.
I know that sounds crazy, but it's the wrong choice.
It is. It's one of the things that... that my soccer coach used to talk about all the time was with that stuff with choices, and you can't let the result determine whether it was the outcome can't be the determining factor whether it was the right thing to do, like whether you should have passed here or you should have, you know, whatever you should have done. Just because it ended up with a goal doesn't mean it was the right thing to do. Same thing here.
If Katsingano somehow got Ronda Rousey in that blitz, it's still the wrong choice.
The result.
I think you put that well, and I think by circling back on that a couple times, people can see that. I think it we're making sense. You know, if he choked him and got $50,000, he still made the wrong choice. The fact that it worked, the one in a thousand, the stars aligned, it was still the wrong choice. That's interesting.
It's to me, it's the complexity of the board. If you look at the chess analogy again, there's so much going on, and it's the tension. You can prepare. To me, again, like the way Chris could have prepared for the mind games with Luke and all that stuff. You can prepare for the pressure that Habib is going to put on you.
They knew it was coming.
Yeah.
And
it's no surprise.
They thought they were prepared, and they may have said they were prepared, and they may have believed they were prepared, but he wasn't prepared.
But you can be technically prepared and physically prepared, but if you're not mentally prepared for that pressure, then you're not prepared.
So anything novel can overload you, can freak you out, can make you... if you're not prepared for it. And everybody has personal experience of some kind, whether they can think of it right now. Fighting is a simple one. But I remember the first time I saw my own blood, I was not prepared for that. It was weird. I started thinking, I wonder what's hurt.
Yeah.
I wonder if it's, I think my nose is... It's the second time you see your blood, it's just your blood. It's no big deal. In fact, it's kind of cool. You know, you're fighting now. And the first time somebody spoke to me in a fight, it was weird.
Yeah.
And it threw me out. Very next fight, I started talking to him when I got him. Because I knew how much it worked. I knew how much it unsettled me. But there's so many novel experiences in there. And if you think all that's going to happen is you're going to punch and you're going to kick and he's going to punch and he's going to kick, it's so much more complex than that. And so the chessboard itself became more complicated. And also he started making faster moves and staring you in the eye and kicking you under the table.
Yeah.
Sorry, that probably sounded terrible for this. fascinating. But I think we can see that was a bad choice.
Yeah. There's one more, and then the other one kind of links the next thing I want to talk about.
Yeah.
But the Matt Brown, Damian Maia fight, which again people think of as just a dominant performance by Maia, and it was. But
I know
there was a moment. Yeah. I watched this with you.
Yeah.
Remember, this is the night that Bisping beat Rockhold.
Yeah, that's right.
So this is like, if we roll it, we can see that the fight kind of played out like this, where Damian was just, he gets that single leg, he gets to the back. That's his MO.
There he goes trip, and usually the right arm might reach the far right shoulder, but here he's crowding him. He doesn't have to go that choice. But he might now here, right arm to foot. Yeah. Oh, he doesn't even need it.
Yeah.
Often they'll reach up and use it as a pull. And even Matt Brown, two hands on one with that baseball back grip. Maya's like, oh, whatever.
Yeah.
That's cool. So, yes, this is what people remember.
And this is round one. This is the way the fight looked.
Yeah.
And it was Damien in this dominant position and Matt kind of hanging on.
Yeah.
And you know, defensively doing pretty good from this position, not getting finished. Yeah. But this was the story of the fight.
Is this round two or three? Chase, is this three?
This is the third round. So this is where things start to change. Matt comes out. He has to. He's down two rounds. Yeah. Stuffs the takedown. And it's not a good shot by Damien.
Yeah. And then straight arm,
lets him back up, in control, moving well. Damien lands a shot. But
left hand.
But Matt's mixing things up, even feinting with a kick and different things that he does.
Hands down to draw out punches and to defend. He gets tight, and there he nods.
And then bang. And he's got him hurt now. Decision time, and he rushes in.
Yeah, you're right.
And then you can see what happens next.
Yeah. You show him that videotape, or you ask him, damn it, I shouldn't have gone in when I had him hurt. I was doing the right things, but he got in a hurry. The chessboard got complicated, but he thought he needed it now.
The chessboard was complicated the whole fight. Damien pulls him onto mount and still recovers guard, and then comes up with the single and finishes. He finished the fight then.
But yeah, you see, and there's Matt. He's like, you see it. Fuck.
Yeah, all three of those fights ended by finish as well.
Yeah.
But Matt had that chance. Mm-hmm. That fight could go down a very different way. He stays on his feet, gets him back up. It could go downhill real quick for Damien.
So the complexity of the challenge, you see, no doubt about it.
But that's one of those things you can prepare for again.
Yeah,
we don't follow him down.
Yeah,
we don't follow him down even when he's hurt.
Yeah,
that's one of those things.
Ever.
That's Matt's instinct. Yeah. Matt's
go-to
fighter.
At his
heart, at his core, he's a fighter, and he's an aggressive. Yeah. He looks to finish. He's got that. That's why he is who he is. He's that exciting style, but you can prepare for this. You can prepare, and you can simulate this in training. You can visualize this. You can work on this mentally. You do not follow him to the ground.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you do not follow him to the ground. And that's one of those things. You retrain your instinct, but it's possible.
Yeah. And we need whoever is the voice of don't follow him to the ground has to understand that we think we have that in them. But what if we're wrong? Let's make sure we have that.
Yeah.
Whether we're dealing with it psychologically or we're dealing with it through repetition, we are in the third round, we're saying it again. Whatever we have to do, we have to do it. Those are complex problems. Those are complex situations. But the similarity between Habib and Matt Brown there is a urgency. There is a this again another conversation, but we often will hear people say, "Oh, he needs to have a sense of urgency."
Mm-hmm.
That can be a terrible sense.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That can be a terrible sense. He had the urgent vibe to go down and get him. It's urgent. I got to get him. MJ had this urgent vibe. This, I'm in trouble. I better choke him.
Yeah.
There's this feeling of urgency that isn't real.
Isn't
valuable.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's there. They're down.
Yeah,
and especially in Matt Brown's case, he was down two rounds.
Yeah.
But there's still the right choice to be made.
Mm-hmm.
You can have the it's urgency, and you need to finish to win the fight most likely. But there's still the best way about going about that. You know, and that panic of rushing in,
mm-hmm.
he wouldn't do it if he had it back over. You know, if he could pause it and take him out of the situation, what are you going to do here? I'm going to let him back up, and I'm going to keep peppering him here. You could feel it was starting to change. The momentum was starting to change, mm-hmm. same as the Michael Johnson fight, and then just that one key decision, and it's over, and that's. That's just that gives some idea of just how much is going on in the middle of a fight.
Yeah, and that certain ideas that are good are not automatically good. Being an opportunist is not inherently a good choice.
Yeah.
Because that's what he thinks is happening here. He's being an opportunist. He's hurt. I get him.
Yeah.
MJ's got his neck out. I'm in trouble. I'm going to get taken down anyways. I'll be an opportunist. That sounds like a good thing in theory, but if the choice is the wrong choice, it doesn't matter. You
mm-hmm.
know? Those are really interesting examples. Really, really cool stuff. And I think people can see them. I think they're defending.
Yeah, it's like it's clearly fight-changing moments. And
mm-hmm.
even in the Brown-Maia fight, where it's dominant fight the whole way through, there was that little bit of, mm-hmm. Matt's got him going here.
Yeah.
You know, let's see how this plays out. And it's just, you know, it's just tough in that situation. But I believe those kinds of things can be prepared for mentally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can anticipate certain things. Like, there's no surprise with what Damian did, what Habib did. There's no surprise there.
So I'm your client, and it's a scenario like Matt Brown is facing,
mm-hmm.
And I'm training to not follow him to the ground. What aspects of your job and the scenario that you find yourself in are important to be able to know? I say, oh yeah, don't worry, I will not follow him to the ground. Yeah, we've been training for what can you do to look and go, maybe I actually think I'm prepared for what needs to be done, but I'm not. How can you know?
Yeah, you can tell with some of the visuals sometimes when they're visualizing and you know they're seeing certain things that seeing it play out a certain mm-hmm. way that maybe it's rushed rather than it mm-hmm. being in control. Got to get this, and it worked. You know, like that kind of. That guillotine would have worked for MJ,
right.
And that would be like, are you sure? You know what? Like, how did that play out? What's the choice there and all that kind of stuff? But just a bigger thing, maybe the way they're talking about the opponent, just
mm-hmm.
subtle things in the way, because we'll address that the whole way through the fight camp. Like I've said it so many times, the story around the fight and coming back to it. About the opponent and just being careful that you're not putting them on a pedestal. You're not trying to stop them from doing something, because the minute you're trying to stop an opponent from doing something, you're screwed.
Mm-hmm.
It still has to be about what you're doing.
Yeah. Within the reality of the context.
Yeah.
Also, we're not understating him either. Oh, he's a bum. I'm going to kill this guy.
We're making sure
that he can't do that. Our guy isn't doing that either.
Yeah.
Oh man, if he comes in, I'll just choke him.
Yeah.
Like we're making sure that he's not in that direction either.
Yeah, exactly. But it still has to be about what you're going to do, what my fighter is going to do, or what the fighter is going to
mm-hmm.
do. That's the maybe the clearest way of the way they're. The words they're using, the way they're describing mm-hmm. the opponent.
So you have another one.
I have one that kind of, I want to get to refocusing.
Yeah. Which is back to relevant what I said about Chris.
Yeah.
By the time we have made one error, it doesn't have to snowball and we're fucked.
Yeah.
It doesn't have to be
again.
That way.
You can just reset. You can take a little step back. You don't even need to do that, but you can do that as extreme
metaphorically
thing as that. Like just reset again. So that didn't land. But let's get back to the body kicks. They're being he's having a really good round. You know, up to that, he won the first round,
as was Matt Brown, and earlier Michael Johnson was too.
So it's that ability to kind of stay in the moment, stay in the present moment, even when you have that sense of urgency. I got to get this finish. Stay in the moment. You don't want to go too far ahead with that, because you're gonna make bad decisions. This one, McDonald and Kanahara. This is you'll remember this.
I do. Yeah, I remember
and
it very well.
So this is still decision making. And a little bit of it's refocusing and decision making at the same time, because I've got some other stuff on refocusing that are more obvious.
What a good looking kid this dude is.
He
just smiling. I'm gonna go fight this dude.
This was where he's setting up the head and arm choke. And he's been setting it up for a while before this even.
That fence there sure helps. Like, you can't, you know, it helps him jam that arm up the way he wants it.
So he gets it in mount. And obviously he prefers to finish it from side. So he comes over knee and belly and over to the side. And there's just
crowds the arm.
So he's like, McDonald knows what's happening for ages. Both of them know what's happening. He's got it, but then Michael gets up on his hip, and it's over now. That position is gone. We're in a new position now. But Kanahara is still in the old position. And it's over.
Just like that. Inactivity was his improper decision.
He never refocused. He was still in the, I'm going to finish this head and arm. It's gone. It's dead. It's over. Michael's up on his hip. He's far shoulders off the mat. It's not, you don't have it anymore. He never reset. He never refocused. He made a poor choice to stay with it.
He did nothing. He made no choice.
He made the choice to stay. Which is a choice still.
He chose to not take any other action. Stay with where he was.
He didn't stay. Stayed with what he played. Stayed in the position a split second ago. But it's still, even if it's that recent, it's still in the past. And Michael's a step ahead. He's adjusting to the back, and that shouldn't happen.
You don't get that. You don't get that off head and arm because the guy adjusts as soon as you move your hip. And if you're going to reach the guy as far, he's going to adjust to either the movement of your hip, or he's going to adjust to you trying to move towards his back. That's really interesting.
But there's
the
so
choice
much going on
to
there.
Not make any other choice.
So much going on with that, where he got attached to that position, and it's obviously a go-to. He's good from that position.
I get this.
This is his thing. He finishes it a lot. He'd set it up. He got the position. It's over, he thinks. But he never refocused to the new position. He never had the chance then to make that choice to adjust and finish on top. You know, the hole might be gone. You're for sure not getting finished. He's not getting your back. You should be finishing on top. Never mind getting not submitted.
You have to adjust now to this new reality. And you have a million good choices to make. Move to a different position here. Stay on top. Choose to move towards the mount again. Move, you know, there's a million choices.
And it feels like it's just rapid. But it's not, though.
No.
Look
how fast a baseball comes and a guy hits it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? In that, the time that took.
That's an eternity.
There's eight baseballs thrown in that time.
So that to me was, when I saw it at the time, I was like, whoa, that's a great example of what I'm trying to get across to some people of being in the present moment.
Yeah, he's living in the past there.
Completely
in
the past.
It was 2 seconds, but he's living in the past.
Yeah.
It's, again, sorry, I kicked under the table. I'm edgy. I got RLS, they call it, restless leg syndrome. That's not a real thing, right?
No, I just made it up.
Made that up. Maybe somebody really has that, but I just wiggle my legs a lot. It's interesting because Michael Johnson and Matt Brown...
They were in the future.
Yeah, I was just going to say, they're living in the future.
Yeah,
you have to be in the moment. It truly in the moment. These are really great examples of All of the other great choices are people living in the moment. Ken O'Hara suddenly was living in the past, and those guys were entertaining the idea of the future as if they had some control over it. Yeah. And the control over the future you have is doing the right thing in the present,
yeah,
not trying to jump to the future. It's really interesting. We're fucking time traveling.
Yeah, but that subtle thing, that choice to stay there, so much of it is not refocusing as well to the new position, because his focus was too narrow.
Yeah.
It was like you can have too broad, where you're Fabricio Werdum against Stipe, and you're just thinking about defending your belt in Brazil, and you're
and the people are behind me and whatever. Yeah. Here I am, or you have no focus.
Yeah.
Or you're just like, what's going on?
Or you're too narrow.
Hyper-focused.
Which he was there, like Bader was against Rumble Johnson, few examples like that. But that's too narrow. So you want to be able to have your attention where it needs to be, and that's what allowed Michael McDonald to be a few steps ahead there. Mm-hmm. Like he's on the back before kind of realizes the choke is gone, and he's getting choked. Then he can't even adjust to stop on the rear naked.
I know you've got something else on refocusing, but another idea thought I have about the past is as something goes wrong. So whatever it is, small thing, no big deal. And like Chris, the spinning kick, sure, you got taken down. But living in the past, like, I can't believe I did that. Like now you're thinking about something that happened. We've lost our focus there too. That happens. And anyone who does any kind of sport or game or anything, when you like get down on yourself, that's still the past. You're now putting mental resources towards something that happened that is irrelevant. It doesn't matter how you ended up in bottom half guard. You're in bottom half guard.
Yeah.
We got to work from here. Thinking about, oh, damn, I can't believe he passed, is a misuse of your focus.
That was one of the first things I learned doing this, like being like in college and getting my master's and doing all the theory stuff was great, but until I got actually working with a fighter and get to see it in
the reality
time and what's going on, I remember it was Aisling Daly, who was my first fighter, and she retired, that bummed me out more than anything else in this sport so far, to be honest with you. That hit me hard.
She's such a sweetie.
She's awesome, and she's done more for safety in the sport than anyone in the country, and then she has to retire because of something like that. It sucks so much.
But, you know, she's going to now obviously do even more for safety because of that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There's always a fork. You regret. The regret is a normal human element, but her future is probably so cool. Wherever that thing is going is probably super cool.
Yeah, she's got lots of options. Like, she's awesome. But. Yeah. So, yeah, it was with her where she used to get really frustrated with the mistake. This is training.
Yeah. And David normally doesn't talk about his clients, but she talks about it. And she's your first client, and you guys have done stuff together publicly.
So it's that way.
Rare occasion where we can actually talk
about it. Anytime the guys talk about me, then it's okay. So she used to get frustrated with training. Like, and make a mistake. And in round one of sparring, and the whole day is wasted now. The whole day is gone. Round six of sparring, still thinking about round one and that mistake. And that was one of those things where, like, you see the reality of being in the past or not being in the present, and having a plan of how to actually deal with that now and letting go of that mistake.
Because the mistake itself,
you learn from it later.
Is not the issue. It's your reaction to it and your focus on it.
Yeah. And it's causing the new mistakes that are happening right now because your focus is not where it needs to be. So that's, you know, that happens all the time.
I bet it would be hard to date her because if you did something bad early in the day and she was angry at you, she'd be later like, well, you started the day bad.
But every fighter's had some of that stuff, that training frustration.
Yeah, right.
Everyone has that moment.
People have that.
People
can think of that. Like that, you know, something goes wrong in the morning and you get to work and your day is shit. That shouldn't be that way.
Yeah.
The fact that you got caught in the rain, and I'm kidding about Aisling and dating her, but I'm thinking of the fact that we can all be like that. And you get caught in the rain, your day shouldn't be wrecked. The fact that it rained has literally nothing to do with the meeting you're going to have at 11 a.m.
Yeah.
It only does because you've decided it does.
Exactly. You haven't refocused. You haven't let go of it. So the examples we have coming up for mm-hmm. the refocusing. There are obvious again. There are examples of there's two examples of not the best refocusing. One is a strange one, mm-hmm. and then there's one that's really good.
Oh, great! Refocusing. So there's three examples.
Yeah.
So let's see the you want to see the strange one, or you
yeah?
See,
let's yeah. let's do the strange yeah. kind of one yeah. first, where it's this is Bisping and Anderson Silva.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Right.
So
it's interesting. You've picked things I know. Well, I mean, I'm immersed in, but I know exactly what you're picking.
Yeah.
And I think so do other people.
By the way, this fight, right in this clip, yeah. we've got two examples. Bisping loses his mouthpiece.
Yeah.
And he needs to refocus
yeah.
now.
Yeah.
But watch him. He's pointing.
Oh my God, this is just unreal. Mike rarely makes these types of errors.
Yeah. And he's right pointing here. Right there. He still needs, and he gets knocked out yeah. even though the bell goes yeah. and saves him. Yeah. So he hadn't refocused on now.
Yeah.
And then Anderson is off
yes,
celebrating.
That's right.
And he thinks the fight's over. Yeah. I don't know if he really did.
No, he was trying to sell it.
Yeah,
I mean,
yeah.
I would too.
Yeah, it makes
like,
sense.
Like, what if we can just, if everybody fills in here and all of a yeah. sudden maybe Herb will.
Herb is telling yeah. him it's not over, and then yeah. he gets up and he jumps in the yeah. fence.
That he's already been told it's not over yeah, here, yeah, so yeah. that's a yeah. terrible choice.
Yeah. yeah, but so he's up in the fence, and his team are I don't know what they're doing. If they, some of them come think on, it's over, some yeah. of them not sure.
No, I think there's, and that's a commission member.
Yeah, that's
but
the guy.
But he has been. That's
in
interesting. He was told, and then he's trying to act like it didn't happen.
Yeah, yeah.
In hopes that this will now be done.
Yeah, 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 yeah. yeah. And you know, there's
not
an argument that it could have been
yeah.
done.
Yeah.
So he has to get going. He hasn't had any chat. He's mm. been on the fence during the yeah. you know the in between rounds. He never got. Never got reset.
Yeah.
Never got refocused.
As Fei Zhao goes in there and his corners, you can see them trying to
yeah,
bring him back.
Get him back.
Because if you were focused there, if you accepted the reality that the round was over, you went back, this guy's hurt. I'm good. Let's not freak out right now. We'll go in and we'll assassinate yeah. Michael Bisping. Yeah. We'll be in the middleweight champ. Yeah. Well, actually, he didn't have the title.
This was
yeah,
before that.
Pre-title.
Yeah, but let's give it at face value where he really thought he had won the fight.
Yeah.
He can still refocus.
He
never did. I don't know how much of this we see the
but
next
Mike
round.
But Mike has a brilliant fourth round.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
Anderson was, at the start of that fourth round, was just not doing much.
Yeah.
And Mike was recovering, and then he came on.
You know what's amazing? We got three examples there. Mike with the mouthpiece,
yeah.
complete loss of focus.
Yeah.
Anderson Silva finishes him, loses focus where he needs to refocus in the next one, and then Bisping refocuses like a motherfucker.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because that's as good of a round as I've ever seen from him as round four, at least as I'm recalling.
Anderson finished it well the end of the fourth, but Mike won the fourth and he had a good round.
Yeah, and the fourth, you win the fourth round, you beat Michael Bisping.
Yeah,
You've got him hurt. All you have to do is win. It's true.
But there's so much to that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And you can say, well, his mouthpiece was on the floor. Who cares, though?
Yeah.
You know, that's
the job right now is Anderson Silva's trying to kill me.
Yeah, exactly. And Anderson's aware of Michael's lack of focus, and he turns it up.
Yeah.
He turns up the attack. Mm-hmm. And then Anderson never gets reset. So there's a lot going on there with that.
Yeah, very.
But you can see how you can step in if you're the fighter and get back to the moment, get back to the present, and reset yourself.
I don't want to take us into voodoo right here, but you were a friend that told me how much I would appreciate meditating,
mm-hmm.
and I really have, and I find that it has changed the way that I see the world and do things. But an aspect of meditation is the fact that our attention will wander; we'll just gently bring it back to the breath or whatever it is.
Yeah.
Is there a certain amount of training of refocusing through that?
Yeah. You can be training in general to be in the present, and it will translate to pressure moments then.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just going to be refocused when it counts then. If you're better at it day to day in general, then you know that you're working on that skill.
Right.
Of being present.
And if you're not very good at it and then you have pressure, you become terrible at it. And if you're pretty good at it and have pressure, you'll become not as terrible at it.
You'll be better.
We can develop the aptitude. It's like building strength. We can become generally stronger, and then we can become stronger in that particular Olympic lift.
Yeah.
We can become generally better at being focused and present in a moment, and then we can become specifically better at it in the moment, the context of fighting.
For sure. Like the baseline comes up, and then you can
and the
work
specialized
on it and specialist situations.
Very
and
cool.
You can't anticipate all of them. It's impossible. But you, the same principles apply, the same fundamentals apply, that you get yourself, we said, it's identifying that you're not in the moment and getting yourself back there. Mm-hmm. The next one, let's look at a chase.
Before you do that, yeah. You said you can't prepare for everything.
No.
And I want, if most people will know exactly what I'm talking about, you're a combat sports fan, but if you're not, I want you to go on YouTube and Google parachute boxing.
Holyfield and Bo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A guy parachuted into the ring. I'm sorry, there is nobody on earth who could be prepared for that situation.
Yeah, yeah. No.
Like, and that is the obvious one. It's hilarious. But I mean, if you deal with that particularly well, and you deal with variables really well, and I don't, that's just now changed the dynamic
exactly.
of our fight.
Exactly. It's impossible to anticipate everything. You can plan for lots of things that tend to happen, but there will be shit that will come up that's never come up before.
And so you need to get better at dealing with shit.
The same fundamentals apply regardless of what the specific situation is.
So what we would get better at is our ability to handle the unknown.
Yeah.
We would develop that skill.
Yes, yes, yes. And knowing where our part is in that and where we need to be right now.
Very cool. I'm having a lot of fun with this chat today. You've got you got a couple other examples.
So this one is another, and it's another, it's a crazy situation. Yeah. It's the Kennedy and Romero fight.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So there's a lot going on here as well. Yoel and Tim Kennedy. So this is, I don't know, I think it's the third round.
Yes, it is. At the end of the second round.
Maybe it's the end of the second, yeah.
This was only
three-rounder.
Oh,
yeah, this is a three-rounder. Yeah, yeah.
End of the second round.
Kennedy's got him going.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, he's got him out.
Hurt bad.
Really bad. Fight, the round ends.
Yeah.
So Tim is back there reset. Yeah. Yoel is in a bad way.
He's wobbled.
Really bad. Yeah. He's like literally hanging onto the fence.
Yeah.
This between rounds. Yeah. Is a long between rounds because
it's like
the corner know what they're doing.
95 seconds or something. Yeah. He needs to recover.
So
we're going to play a little dirty pool because we want to win, and we're going to break. We're going to muddy the rules, and we're going to try to get a little extra time for him to recover.
Yeah,
yeah.
So it's time now. The thing is gone for the 10-second. Yeah. Get the seconds out of there. He's still sitting on the stool. It's not even that he's not ready to go. The stool is in there. Yeah. And he's sitting on it. Yeah. You could disqualify him.
This is when you pretend you don't speak English.
Yeah. You could disqualify him. Big John is trying to get him going. Tim, while this is going on, is giving the crowd big signals.
Crowd's irrelevant.
Yeah, he's trying to get everyone. He's like letting everyone know what's going on. He's taking himself out of the moment.
Yes.
His reaction, like what Romero does, is it sucks, but Tim is in charge of his moment. And then early next round.
Yeah.
He gets dropped with a shot.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of that is because
he's not in the moment. He's not focused.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. I think he might admit that Tim Kennedy is a pretty self-aware guy.
Super.
But what I find interesting is actually afterwards, he just talked about the thing.
Yeah,
he talked about the
and it sucked.
I hate that people put the word gate on anything.
Because
Watergate was a place, but stool gate or ice gate or he did talk about the thing, not his reaction to the thing.
Yeah. And the thing sucked.
Yeah.
You know, you shouldn't be able to get away with that.
Yeah.
And, you know, there could have been a disqualification there, or the fight couldn't be stopped if he's not ready to come out. But, again, you're in charge of your reaction there.
Yeah.
I don't know. You remember Diego Corrales and Luis Castillo?
Mm-hmm.
Where Castillo was in a bad way, and he spits his mouthpiece out. And Goosen's in the corner, and he's taken forever to put it back in. And then Castillo gets knocked out.
Yep.
But a little bit of it was that Castillo was pissed off at Corrales taking so long to get his mouthpiece back in. The fact that he spit it out in the first place, the ref took a point off him for spitting it out, which gave him a little bit more time. It was a great fight. Maybe my favorite fight, because it was a great fight up to that crazy finish.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of thing here. Kennedy is in charge of his reaction. He doesn't need to get the crowd involved. He needs to be getting himself reset while that's happening. He can be separating himself from the emotion of all that, staying calm, and he had him in a bad way. Let's get back to action here.
There's a very similar element of that in Anderson Silva. Although, yes, the one guy's on the cage and whatever, Anderson and Tim kind of both had a great situation and became distracted by something outside that. Took their attention off of that
They
great
took
situation.
Themselves, like, their attention went to somewhere it doesn't need to be, to irrelevant cues.
Yeah.
And you want to stay relevant with what it is you're doing. Mm-hmm. He has a job to do going out and he started the third round. There's no question that his lack of a refocus there was a part to play in the knockout.
Mm-hmm, no question. Michael Bisping did talk about it later. At the time, he was like, yeah, that's nonsense. Later, he looked at it. He also does have he has mental coaching that he does, and a lot of the top guys are starting to understand that. And Mike has become much more self-aware over time. He talks about how, you know, he fought with emotion, thought he needed it. Later, he found out he succeeded despite it, not because of it.
Yeah.
He also went back and looked at it and realized you can learn a lot from it if you admit that you had lost focus. You can then address that.
Yeah.
So he did deal with that. Tim, I don't know that he did. I'm not sure that he did. Sometimes these guys that develop this, you know, a soldier, you know, this is Tim Kennedy's. You know the
Tim's
kinds of
a real soldier.
What he has faced, in his life.
He was a soldier of God, but Tim is an actual soldier.
An actual soldier, exactly. And he has faced some very real things in his life. And sometimes you build up that mental armoring, but it's not the same as being willing to kind of look at your flaws. It's an armoring that you build up. But very interesting. So, and you have one more.
Yeah, and this is on the positive end of that.
Finally.
I know,
We get to look at somebody. But we've established the idea now. It'll make it easier.
So this is from
my guy.
Jorge Masvidal and Cowboy in Denver.
That's a fighter right there.
Yeah. And so is that.
Yeah, oh yeah. That's why it was such a great fight.
It was a great fight. This is the end of round one. You can see the clock up there.
Mm-hmm.
Masvidal, he's really starting to turn it up before this anyways.
Yeah. And also the body kick he knew was coming there.
He shoved it off.
So he swings off with the left. Yeah, and
so the fight looks like it's over because Herb waves it off. It's a strange one.
Jorge immediately says, "Is it over?" Herb goes, "No."
Yeah,
so he knows,
and you can't really see it that clearly because the tape cuts. But Jorge's coach comes in and starts to celebrate with him to try and lift him up.
Yeah.
As in, we did it. We won. It's over. Because it was confusing in the moment. Yeah. Jorge is like, no. He's shaking his head, no, it's not over. And he comes back out, start of the second round.
You notice it's off a kick again.
Yeah.
He was drawing those kicks out by kicking the body. But you're right.
He properly, instantly refocused.
Yeah.
And it was a strange one because that looked like Herb actually stopped it.
Yes.
To me, there was a split second where he waved it and then the bell goes. Yeah.
Herb's a human being, and human beings can question themselves despite the fact that in that scenario you're not supposed to. But Herb's a human, and he's a great human and a great ref. So I forgot Cody that works here. He helped me find some of the footage, or he gathered for me some of the footage of Jorge fighting in the backyards. I forgot to thank Cody. Yeah. Thank you for helping me with that. And gave me the footage, and we were looking at it. And Jorge, while walking past the camera and a guy to go walk towards this fight, is going, "This ain't going to be easy." And it was a strange sort of like self-talk, and he was cool with it. Like, this is not going to be easy, and that's all right.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see it and feel it back then. Do you know what I mean? You could see his mind dealing with the realities of the situation. Because if you think it's going to be easy, or even you hope it's going to be easy, you are fucked.
Yeah.
So you could see him understanding his own mentality in the backyard fights.
Yeah.
You know?
But
he's
got so much better at understanding how to get the best out of himself.
Yeah.
But that ability to refocus, it's the same kind of situation. The fight, I think, was stopped. Herb just decided in the same second that it wasn't, it was the bell.
Yeah.
But Jorge got himself switched back on straight away and came back out and finished the job.
When you refocus your own corner too,
that level of present moment and awareness and everything of what's going on that he's able to tell his corner.
Yeah.
Like, it should be the other way around. Like, it's tough because the corner has to come from the corner around to the cage door to get in, so they can miss stuff on the way around.
Yeah.
But it should be the other way around in theory, that the coach is calming the fighter down and getting him reset. But that's how much Jorge was in the present, ready to go again. So it's a nice little contrast, that one, with the others.
He has been this way for a long time. Like, he's been this good of a fighter for a long time. The reason I wanted guys like Cobb, Jorge, there's these guys that are unbelievably skilled and special, athletes, artists, whatever they are, and that people don't see it. And so what I like to do is make sure they do.
Mm-hmm.
So he knocked out Cowboy, and it was spectacular. But he was this thing 3 fights ago and 5 fights ago. He's going to get better still all the time.
Yeah.
But at least now people have seen the one signature fight that he needed. But Jorge Masvidal is this fighter. This is why he, you know, and I think it's great that...
That's why you and me and lots of other people were super excited for this fight.
Yeah. Yeah.
And how good it could be.
Yeah, because he is that guy.
Yeah.
But sometimes, hey, we don't all get to deep dive the things that we love and keep learning about them, be curious about them, and study them. We don't all get to do that. We have jobs and families and stuff like that. So sometimes it takes the result for people to see it. Jorge knocks out Cowboy, has a brilliant fight. They finally see it. But I'm just glad they do.
And I think just looking at him from a distance, I've never actually met Jorge. Mm-hmm. He seems like a guy who has actually, you know, stepped up his preparation and that side of things, and he's really starting to live up to his potential now.
Yeah,
because he's had potential, but that doesn't mean anything if you don't do something about it.
That's true.
I think he's really started to get to that next level with the prep and all that kind of stuff, and the way he's focused on what he can get done here, and I expect him to go to other levels.
I agree.
I can see him really kicking on.
So. Do you have more on this topic?
That's all the VT we have.
Okay, we'll talk more about it. I'm going to hijack the conversation for a moment.
Yeah.
But based on something you just said, I've been reading and studying and trying to consume the ideas of it is very hard to get to, let's say, you know, every athlete here is in the top 1% of, you know, top 0.1% of fighters who begin.
Yep.
To get into the top 1% of that percent is a whole other life.
It
requires more work because now the level of competition that you are, they're all that. They're all doing it. So to go beyond that and to be the best of the very best requires a lot more from you than it took you to even get here.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the athlete or the artist or the person has to ask themselves, am I going to do that?
Yeah.
Do I have that in me? Do I believe that it's in me and am I going to take that journey? You know what I mean?
But the stuff that you've done to get to this point, it all matters.
Yeah.
And it can all be used to get to that next level.
Yeah.
I think I've seen fighters do that. I've known fighters that have broken through into that next level, where they were, you know, just on the cusp, and then they break through, and they're there in that elite level.
Yeah, and they're almost a white belt again, moving very quickly, or whatever analogy you want to use, where they suddenly are able to grow a bunch again, plateau. Some new things have been changed in who you are, or how you see the world, or your systems, or you've optimized something, and now you break through and have even more growth.
Yeah.
But that is not easy.
Yeah, but I think the first thing that comes is the acceptance that it's possible.
Mm-hmm.
Not the belief that it's possible. It's accepting that I can actually do this. I can actually break in here. There's nothing special about the people that are there right now.
Yeah.
They're doing special things,
but
they're not special.
They did this and I can do this.
Yeah. It is possible. It can be done. And then it's about figuring out what it is you need to do to get there and to improve so much and make those improvements.
And then doing
the areas,
it.
What are the areas you need to improve? Identify them. And then actually having the, I don't know what the word is, whether it's courage or commitment or whatever, to actually go do it then.
Courage is a fair one because that might not sound like it until you think about the reason people don't do things is because they might fail.
Yeah.
You need a certain amount of courage to say to yourself, I'm going to do this thing. I'm going to chase this thing.
Yeah.
Because if you fail, you probably did something really cool. You probably you lived your life very fully. And that alone, over time, removes the fear of trying harder or going further or doing more. Because failure would mean that I did this great thing and I took many chances and I grew as a human being. Mm-hmm. So therefore, there's inherent value in doing it.
Yeah. Once you're looking at it like that.
Yeah.
But you have to kind of admit to yourself that, yes, I can do this.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're setting yourself up with, you know, the new pressures, and you're not staying safe anymore with the level you're at. And
well, admitting you can do it means if you don't do it, that's on you.
Yeah.
And that's why it is intimidating to say, you know, I could accomplish anything, or I could accomplish much, because that means if you're not, that's on you. Mm-hmm. That is the choices that you made. You talk about choices in a fight. These are the choices you made in going through life that, well, I would rather eat this burger than I'd rather than do this, or I would rather do something else rather than study this thing. And that, so you do need courage to do that. But at this level now, so many are improving so much that to just to stay where you are requires a ton of improvement.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's fascinating.
Yeah, it really is. Like, it's, I suppose it's always been like this, but it's even more, it's faster, the rate of it's faster now. Mm-hmm. Where, like, I don't know, you can, the obvious examples are recently are Ronda and things like that.
For sure.
The game is levels above now. Yeah. Where it was.
For sure. And when you go large, people don't always want to see that or generally accept that idea unless you take wide distances, a huge distance. So now we take instead Derek, at the time we're talking about this, Derek Brunson is about to fight Anderson Silva. If you say Derek Brunson and guys of his level are better than Anderson Silva was in 2007, people maybe don't agree. Is Derek Brunson better than Hoyce Gracie was at UFC 1? Mm-hmm. Yes, you can see that. Right? Yeah. So often you need to have large, huge swaths of time for people to accept that comparison. But in fact, 8 months, fighting is very different than it was.
Yeah.
We meandered down a rabbit hole here from focus, but
We lost focus there.
Yeah, we did. We lost focus, and we started to focus on the crowd, or we started to focus on Herb Dean or Murphy's. That's interesting. So, any other thoughts while we're on this topic before I'm going to go buy you a beer?
I just think all those things can be worked on in the preparation. Yeah, you can take lessons from them now. Mm-hmm. It's easy to take a lesson. Yeah. Wouldn't you felt that? If you're one of those fighters and you felt that and you've experienced it, you can take lessons from it. Therefore, you can have those. You don't have to have gone through the. You can have prepared for it and planned for it and mentally be on point before that even happened.
Yeah. True. So, to as much degree as we can accomplish at the stage where you are.
It's not about the things. Yeah. It's about the fundamentals that apply to how you react and how you deal with those.
So if I was talking to a fighter or you were working with somebody and you showed them the footage of the parachute, that is the extreme example.
Yeah.
But, and again, like Hoyce Gracie at UFC 1, that's the extreme example. But there are millions of tiny things between
so
regular things happening and a parachute. There are millions of possible variables that you can never expect.
Yeah. But you can know how, like, the fighter talking shit to you during the fight is the exact same thing as one of your teammates losing beforehand.
Right.
Getting knocked out before you step out there.
Right.
It's the exact same thing. It looks like very different things.
Yeah.
They're just things that can take your focus away and it's on you how you're reacting to them. Mm-hmm. They're the exact same.
Well, I'm just sharing my own experiences at my low level of being exposed to it. A couple of fights before I fought in Winnipeg once, this guy, Eric, who I end up fighting, was actually the guy who shit-talked me while we were fighting, which really threw me. He's a great guy and a great fighter. He and this other guy, and I unfortunately forget the other guy's name right now. I'll remember it after this. They fought before me, and the other guy unfortunately had some real trauma from the fight. Beautiful fight, and he put on an incredible fight, damaged, and he had some trauma, and they took him out on a stretcher, and it was a very tense situation. And by the time the rumor came upstairs to where we were, they were talking about his throat being plugged, and somebody had to like stick a pen in there, and like all that kind of stuff. And you can't prepare for that in your early fights, but you can prepare for the idea that something can attract your attention. And so what about the coach? We can prepare the coach to deal with recognizing that you have lost focus.
Yeah, and getting it back on track and having some
tools,
some whether it's some key words or some things to get the guy back where you want him to be. But that involves the coach staying focused and the coach being present as well, which we saw in some examples wasn't the case there.
Right.
So everyone has a part to play in the coach is performing as well on the night. You know, the ability to go in and give that advice between rounds, That's performing.
And during, and give him what he needs at the beginning and on the night. Yes, we have talked about that a little bit before, but I want to definitely dig into that a little more next time, of coaching the coach and identifying the coach's needs and the coach working on his own things. I definitely want to get into that.
Yeah.
And we've had John Kavanaugh on. Maybe he'll come on again if you ask him.
Maybe not.
Yeah. If not, maybe we could ask Dwayne, or we could ask Duke or somebody.
Yeah,
and
cool.
Let's, if you think of a few things about that, let's talk about it in advance, and I'll line up, or Mike Brown or somebody really.
It'd be cool.
There's some great coaches
because they
out
have
there
to prepare themselves you know, as well as prepare the fighter. Hmm. They have to be on point to get the best out of themselves.
Yeah. To get the best out of them.
Which the outcome is getting the best out of the fighter. It's the same as the fighter performing to get the result.
Yeah, right. You know, yeah, very interesting.
That's the way I look at it.
So I'm going to Vegas for UFC 209. As we tape this, you could be watching it anytime. It's the internet. Is just before 208. But let's try to get together again at least
209
once.
209 is an awesome card.
Yeah, super awesome.
My God,
yeah, I'm going to Vegas for the whole week.
Yeah.
Yeah, that MMA awards thing is then and I might be presenting an award too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that'd be really
cool.
That'd be really fun. So there's that, and the weigh-ins, and you know, press conferences, and chances to chat with them all week. I love that because I love to see them up close in the lead-up, you know, and see how they're doing physically, and see how they seem, and get, you know, what they say. I'm not always as interested in as the things that you can see kind of behind it, but what they say can sometimes
it can matter.
So that'll be cool. But let's try to get together between now and then.
Yeah, for sure.
Cool. Thank you guys so much. It's like fun hanging out with you. And this was a really interesting conversation. I found it interesting. Let us know if you guys did too. And David Mullins, sportspsychology.com, right?
Yep.
And he's David Mullins, MMA on Twitter. I'm Robin Black, MMA on Twitter. And I'm going to go take him and Chase Kaiser and my friend Graham out for beers. So thanks for hanging out with us.